Get Pucked.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 3 of the Get Pucked podcast. Super excited that hockey is actually starting for real, for real. I think we have one more preseason game left. We're going to go over the last couple of preseason games and the current storylines and all that wonderful stuff. And as always, Vito, Matt, and Dave here with you today. So thanks for taking the time and listening to us and our very amateur approach to watching the hockey. And so what we're going to talk about today...
Amateur.
Listen, we've been...
Only two out of three of us are amateurs.
We are no better, no worse than the everyday fan. Because some people think we're like, I don't know, pretending like we have some sort of inside scoops on things and we're semi-pros. No. This is a fan-based podcast, everybody. Thank you very much. That being said, we take it a little bit more serious than maybe the everyday fan. And one of those serious topics comes about a player that on this very podcast, I might remind you both, we have poo-pooed on quite heavily. And I want to bring him up again because I think we may have to issue some apologies. Well, Matthias Norlander's current play has been actually pretty solid. I have to admit, I don't know necessarily if this is the player that was perhaps promised a couple years ago and the hype train that was behind this kid. I don't think he's quite there, but he's definitely played really, really well. Far better than we've seen him maybe ever in a Canadiens uniform. And so what I'm thinking of asking you, gents, is has he played well enough? Has he done enough in your estimations to have earned himself one of those coveted six defensive spots? There is quite a few players there, and I just want to hear your take about it. Do you think Norlander has done what it took, what it needed to be shown from his end to earn himself a spot? Vito?
I mean, give him the 10 games at the very least, because he has been solid, but I'm just questioning whether he's been really good and good enough to get to merit the 10 games, or if Montreal's power play is so bad that he creates that little bit of a spark that it needs just to be a little bit better. So to really test that and see if that's actually the case, I would give him the 10 games because he did earn it. And I mean, either way, who's there that you look at and is cemented in their spot in a sense that they couldn't make space for him in certain situations or certain games?
I mean, you know, in like, theory, he'd be left side, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's safe to say Gouley and Matheson aren't going anywhere. So he's taking that last spot, which means you're now sitting Arbor Jack guy, for example. Would you be cool with that?
It depends the game. If it's a game against a team that's a bit more on the physical side or can get a bit out of control, then you don't play a player like Norlander. You'll play a guy like Jack Eye. They have the luxury of being able to do that with their five and six defensemen. You know, okay. So it's not something everybody's going to like because, you know, you want to create the chemistry and have certain pairings together and whatnot. But this is the situation they have. They have to, at some point, create some space for certain players who are performing and who are meeting the expectations or exceeding them. And at some point, if he doesn't, then goes to Laval, and all of a sudden he goes up the depth chart with the way he's been playing. You know, a lot of us had him pegged outside of Laval.
Yeah, exactly. No,
he's done, like, we saw him live, right? And he did some good things, and he created there was a spark there on the power play, and he did score, and he's a lot better this year than he was last year. You know, he's in the conversation that we're asking if whether he would play on the Habs roster or whether he merits a spot on the Habs roster. Last year, we were even questioning whether he should have been in the top six in Laval. You know, when we're looking at the offseason with Mayu coming in and players like that and Struble and whatnot, we're like, where's Norlander fit in all this?
But don't you think that's a massive jump? We're going from last season where he doesn't make the top six in the AHL to now we're talking about does he merit a spot in the NHL? Doesn't that kind of level of progression speak volumes to how much better
he's playing? It does, but it's also against what competition has he been playing against? You know, who's he been playing against?
Well, he had his best game last night against the actual Toronto Maple Leafs, for example.
Right, but again, he looked really good. I would give him the 10 games and see how he performs by game 7, 8, and 9, let's say. And if you see he's starting to struggle by that point, then, okay, go back to Laval, and all of a sudden, you know, don't make him play, bottom minutes in Laval. give him top minutes. And if he dislodges somebody there, then he dislodges somebody there. That's what we want to see. We want to see that kind of internal competition. And people, the people who deserve to be called up and the people who deserve to play for the Montreal Canadiens will play for the Montreal Canadiens.
Dave, is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I guess so. To me, it's just, again, it's I'm a little weary about it, just in the sense that he didn't blow people away in Laval, right, last year. Like, everyone's asking, like, oh, why wasn't the power play better in Laval? Well, he barely played on the power play in Laval last year, mostly because he wasn't trusted with those situations, right? He didn't have the confidence. He didn't have whatever the situation or the X factor was. And now, all of a sudden, with no games in between now and these two, three preseason games, all of a sudden now he's a stud and he's stealing a spot from someone. It makes me worry a little bit, and it makes me a little bit hesitant in terms of just giving him the spot because he's had that good count. I'd like to see him again, in the future games. Again, he'd be taking a spot from someone, right? Not necessarily, okay, yes. Jack, I maybe not a big deal, but that means you can't either, you know, somebody asked Harris, Barron, like Kovacevic, who's not going to make the team because he made the team, right? He's taking that spot from someone. Mayu is a far distant, I see a lot of people on social media calling for that. I don't think it's going to happen, but he would take the spot of somebody. So is that worth a couple of good preseason games against guys who may or may not be trying hard? Like, you understand what I mean? And Vito's right to this point. Yes, he provides a bit of a spark on the power play, but is that just because the Habs power play is terrible? That could be something.
I will say this. He had a better camp than Barron. He deserves a spot or at least 10 games in the NHL more so than Barron does right now.
So to follow up to your both comments, do you now have, like, where do you see the three of these guys? I put Norlander, Mayu, and Barron all together and I say put 1, 2, 3, who do you have as 1, 2, 3 of those three guys?
Like, are you asking my opinion? Because I think in the Habs...
Of course I'm asking your opinion.
No, because I think the Habs still see Barron probably as higher than both of those guys. Like, I think Barron's going to make this team. So I don't think that there's even, like, a discussion. If it was up to me, I think Barron would still be one. I think Norlander would be two, and Mayu would be three, just for the sense that Mayu has a lot of flaws in his game that he has to go fix. He has to go... he has that junior kind of mindset still. He has to go fix those...
He did some nice things throughout the entire preseason. You saw some flashes with him and good skating, good offensive flair, good offensive instincts. It was a bit physical from time to time, but yeah, there were some defensive lapses there.
For the defensive lapses, who cares? I'm of the mindset, this guy be 100% a fourth forward.
Right, but I'd rather he go play in Laval 20 minutes a night.
He has to learn some fundamental. That's fine in, like, time now when this season doesn't count. But, like, down the line, he's going to have to learn somewhere. And it's not always best to just toss them into the fire. And we've seen it time and time again where it doesn't work out for defensemen. It works out the first two seasons. They do amazing because they have no expectations. And it doesn't work out. I think it's a great idea.
I mean, his situation's a little bit different because he's got the age. And the other thing that this team has, that perhaps if Mayu was on a different team with what he has shown so far, he might have gotten a look at the NHL level. The Habs have so many defensemen that are right there. And there is no reason to rush. And this isn't going to be a year that realistically they're going to compete hard. So why not give him 25, 30 minutes in the AHL, let him dominate. Let him really put up some incredibly high offensive numbers, because that's going to be a skill set. I understand what you're both saying about he needs to polish off his defense a little bit better. For sure. He's got to be not a complete liability defensively. But this guy will never be a defensive stalwart, ever. That's not his game. He is designed to be a rushing defenseman, a big body, get up there, push, pinch when he's there, set things up.
And to your point, while there were some nice flashes and he did some nice things, and to some people he probably exceeded expectations, I still don't think he's there to merit a spot right now with the Montreal Canadiens.
And that's fine. I'm not saying that it's him that's up for debate for the spot. I think a lot of people suggesting for him to get the games, it's a bit of a stretch. I thought he had a really, really good camp. There's a lot of promise here. Most people who are, like, really ragdolling this kid for the off-ice things completely discounted the actual skill that he had. And if that thing didn't happen, he would not have been drafted 31st.
Well, there was people even ragdolling him in terms of his actual play. And you know what?
They didn't see him play. They're
pretty quiet right now. Those are just people that baited in for whatever it was, whether it was outside things, whether it was just people.
Well, obviously, it's the outside.
Whatever the case may be. Either way, they're quiet right now because he did a lot better than people expected in camp at the NHL level.
Well, okay. So moving off defense, and let's talk about things about expectations with certain players that have exceeded and others that have definitely did not live up. You got two kids, right? You got Heinemann and Yolonen, both that I think had really good camps. Heinemann in particular, I thought looked really well. This looks like an NHL caliber player. He's there. But for them to make the team, it would seem, unless the math I've done is incorrect here, that you'd have to likely waive like guys like Tanner Pearson and Armia for them to take those spots. Is that something that you can actually see happen? Because as far as I can tell, I don't believe Kent Hughes has ever waived an actual NHL roster established player before. I'm not saying that he's against it. I'm just saying it hasn't happened yet. But Armia's camp has been bland, to say the least. And, I mean, Tanner Pearson is Tanner Pearson at this point. I mean, when we acquired him, I think most people are like, oh, yeah, if you wave him, whatever, doesn't matter. It was just to get rid of Casey DeSmith, and you got a third back. It was more the third, more than Tanner Pearson. So what's your take on that? Do you, if that did happen, how would you feel about it? Do you think it can happen? And if not, what do you do with guys like Heinemann and Yolonen? Dave, start with you, babe. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they should absolutely do it. But I think that the player agent in Kent Hughes is kind of, his heart is breaking at the thought of waving Joel or Mia. you know what I mean? Like, I think it hurts him to wave a roster player. But that's what's going to be interesting. Is he going to be the type of guy who's a player's GM and doesn't wave the guy, tries to trade him, maybe tries to make a move? Or does he, you know, do what's best for the team, which I think it should be the play. I'd be perfectly fine with them waiving them, but I don't know if I see it happening, in all honesty.
It's fair. It's I think a thought that most people are feeling the same way. You know, how do you feel about that?
I don't think they're going to waive Tanner Pearson, and I don't think they're going to waive Armia. Armia's already hurt. What else is new? He's going to end up on IR, and that's how the roster spot's going to open up. He's going to come back for 10 games, be a total dud in those 10 games, as he always is. Have one out of 10 games, maybe, where you look and say, that's the Armia we wish we had on an everyday basis. And then he's going to go back on IR again. I don't know what's with this guy right now. He all of a sudden became so injury prone. Or maybe he just doesn't want to be here. I don't know. But he's got that contract. Unfortunately, it's a bit longer than we'd hope. I'd have no problems waiving Armia. I would be a bit reluctant to waive Tanner Pearson. I want to see what he can do with the Habs. I want to see what he can do also from a leadership perspective, being a vet, being, you know, he's got a bit of a success story, and I want to see that bounce back story with him. You know, like the guy had a hand injury, and there was all that story in Vancouver, and now apparently, according to Kent Hughes, it's about, you know, he's got about 80% of his strength back in that hand.
I think he said that himself. He's about at 80%.
So I just want to see that storyline continue with Tanner Pearson and where he would fit, if he would even fit with the Habs. I don't know which line. You know, every time I went on Cap Friendly and played with their interactive GM, I had him on the third for now. Armia, yeah. I have no issues waving Armia. In fact, I've sent him down before, and whether he'll likely report anyways, but he's gonna go. He's IR bound, in my opinion.
So stick to Tanner Pearson for a second. So you're prepared to keep him up with the big club. That means you have to send Heinemann down. You're fine with that?
I'd rather send Yolonen. Only because Heinemann can play. He's like a bit of a Swiss Army knife in a sense. You could play him in your anywhere in your second, third, fourth, depending on injuries, and he'll fit that position well. Yolonen, if you don't have space for him in your top six, pushing it top nine, I don't think it's going to work. He's not a fourth line player.
Well, Yolonen is a right wing, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Right. But he's not a fourth line player.
But what? Well, okay. So here's my question: he's a right wing, and he's not a fourth liner. So you have him ahead of Anderson?
No, Gallagher? I have him honestly. In all honesty, I have him ahead of Gallagher. If I want that kind of player,
so if Gallagher I want that is kind of $6.5 million.
Well, it turned out that way. The guy's got a bunch of injuries. Did you see Gallagher's camp? He can't skate. The poor guy is not as fast as everyone's passing him now. Like, okay, can he be an agitator and be in front of the net and be the good guy and the heart and soul and the spark plug? To a certain degree, he can still be a spark plug. But, I mean, what are we talking about here? He's on that line here. He's on that line. And I, you know, our HP, our own players are passing him are too fast. They got to, he's slowing down the game for that line. Now, he could be in good shape and all that, but at the end of the day, he's got some hard miles on him. And I want him playing against the lowest competition on the other end.
And where do you have Tanner Pearson? Because he is certainly not fleet-footed either, my friend. Where he's do you not. Have him?
He's on that's the fourth line also. That's going to be a brick of a fourth line.
I mean, no, that's what I'm saying.
I had him third line LW is what I had him as.
If I would have to go back to what Dave was saying, I don't believe they're going to waive them. But if Kent Hughes handed the reins over to me for 5 minutes, I would waive both of them. I would keep Heinemann. I would keep Yolonen up. I would waive those two guys. Armia, at this point, it just is what it is. I mean, there's conspiracy theories out there that he's fugazing this whole injury anyways because he doesn't want to be waived. I don't believe that. But, you know, if that's the case, he's starting to get injury prone. He doesn't produce. His camp was super vanilla, did nothing, and he was fighting for a spot.
Okay, here, let me counter. Okay, so we know that Montreal right now has already two retention spots taken up, right? So would you sacrifice right now, given that the trade deadline's in March, trading Armia, but you have to retain this year, you have to retain his contract or some salary on his contract, which is going to be for another 2 years, which means for the next 2 years, you got Petrie and him locked up on your retention spots. Would you make that move right now?
Yes.
But at trade deadline, that means Montreal doesn't have that leverage to be able to retain any salary at all. They're done.
You are not going to go to trade deadline and all of a sudden have greater value in Joel Armia.
If you can trade someone else. You know what I mean?
If you want to be able to be a third team again, or whatever the case may be, you won't be able to.
Figure out that problem in March. Get him out of here now. If there were a trade on the table, he would have been gone already. There is nobody around knocking for Joel Armia. The only option left is to waive him. But if you could trade him, if suddenly somebody got hurt and some team out there is like, we need a fourth line right winger, we see this guy, we'll take him off your hands, but we're not paying that price, hold some money back. Yeah, you make that trade.
Joel Armia is not the type of guy you retain money on. Joel Armia is a headache and a problem, and you find a way to get rid of him. You don't retain his salary.
I agree. He's a headache and a problem. But the only way to get rid of that headache, if it were to retain salary, you do that move. You have to. You have to do that move.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd do it, to be honest. I'm being totally honest. Wild. I want to get Armia as get rid of Armia as much as the next guy, but you know, taking up that retention, I don't know. I don't know if I'd do it. I'm not happy about it.
I wouldn't do it either. If Montreal had two retention spots available, that's a different story. Then I'd say, okay, sacrifice one just to move Armia's contract for this year, next year at $3.4 million. But they only have one left because they've got Eddie this year and they got Petrie for another 2 years. So that's it. You got Petrie locked in for 2 years on a retention spot. So once Eddie goes away, then okay, Montreal's got two again, and maybe they can make an Armia move happen in that way. But I know come trade deadline with how the cap is this year and it's not going up this year, that retention spot is going to be huge.
I'd be interested to see in the history of the NHL, how many guys like Armia, like fourth liners, have salary retained in a deal? Like, I don't see it. I don't see it at all. I don't think I've ever seen it. I don't think he's not the type of player that happens.
Hold on a second. He's a fourth liner here. The funny he's part is, let's no, hold on. Let's go back to the famous Dave saying the GMs in this league are dumb. And they look at Joel Armia, and they look what he did in Worlds, and they look at what he has as a skill. And there it is, baby. Oh. NHL general managers are dumb. Absolutely. You look at this guy as an outside GM, and you see him, and you're like, if they keep a little bit of money, we get this guy, we could fix him. He could be a really good third liner for us. I'm just saying, I look at it, From the Canadian's perspective, he has no spot on this team anymore. So I equate Joel Armia right now to a zombie bite. He bits your foot. You have to shoot the foot off. Otherwise, you get taken over. You become a zombie yourself. You do what you got to do. Cut that bad boy off.
Yes. NHL GMs are dumb, and we've always said those types of things. But you know what? They're not that dumb. Not at $3.4 million for another 2 years.
I beg to differ, sir. There are contracts out there. There are players that are on teams that are being paid money that would prove they are that dumb. And at the end of the day, it always comes down to that little bottom piece. The money is always going to be an issue with him without question, but I don't think you move him without retaining. you have to retain a little bit.
No, well, that's what I'm saying, and I don't think Montreal has right now to retain that salary, especially for 2 years.
Well, if they're not going to waive him, and he's got an upper body injury that isn't severe, so he's coming back, where does he go? He's taking the spot of one of the kids. He has to.
Well,
he's on the
fourth
line.
Let's say he's hurt for 20 games, hypothetically speaking. Okay,
he's not for 20 games, but go ahead.
Let's just say, hypothetically speaking, okay, he's back at game 20. They got to make space for him. Then they might, Paul Byron him and waive him at that point. If the kids are performing, and if you literally look and say, no, they form the chemistry, these are the guys we want to keep. Sorry, then, Joel.
Waive him now. Well, once he's off being injured, waive him. The moment he's not injured anymore, waive him.
Kent Hughes will likely, as a player's GM, and to Dave's point, will likely try to market him in a way or try to make something happen, problem for problem, whatever case could be.
The problem with the marketing, guys, is that we keep pointing back to that world championship. I barely remember that, and it's our job to cover the sports. There's no other GMs who was oh, man, remember 2 years ago for six games he was decent? no one is remembering that. No one's banking on that. Everyone looks at Yoel O'Neill.
I don't disagree.
The only way we're going to take him is if you give us a prospect or if you give us a pick or if you take our headache off our
okay. You know what? I would say I think
that's a good idea. I would trade Joel Armia and one of the defensive prospects and to get rid of him.
Whoa.
Not one of the great ones, but one of the ones that you look at and you're like, kid simply doesn't have a spot. To get that contract off,
somebody like Struble.
If
or you know what? Montreal's got a crap ton of picks for 2025. Tack on one of the picks.
Yeah. You got to do something. It's not just 1 year expiring contract. It's 2 years left guy. Who doesn't even fit on your fourth line? You must do something. You must.
Yes, you just can't retain.
You must. I don't want to retain. I don't want to. But I would very much consider doing it if that meant getting rid of him right now and letting the future play. A future that actually looks good. The players that would be in his spot are good.
On Twitter, some people have debated this. And I saw some people that they'd rather retain and move Jake Allen than Joel Armia.
Well, he's got how many? He's got a year left.
Who, Allen?
Jake Allen. No,
He's got this year and next year at 3.5.
Yeah. I mean, the goalie debate is just wild because you got Primo still up there. Are they carrying three? I don't know why you would, but because you're concerned if you waive Primo, someone's going to claim him. Yeah, goalies are rough, and everybody wants goalie depth. So, I mean, is it possible? Sure.
Well, right now you got Tampa that's just waiting for people to start to wave.
The Vasilevskiy situation in Tampa does. I mean, but are you serious?
I said it a few episodes ago. Either at the start of training camp, during training camp, or at the start of the season, there's always a few goalies that go down, and teams don't want to lose ground in the standings. They'll pick up whatever they can to just get them by. The difference with Tampa Bay's situation is that it's 2 months without their number one goalie, and they don't really have a backup.
Well, is Brian Elliott?
I don't think.
It's not Brian Elliott.
He's not even there. It's Johansson.
You would claim Primo?
I would. If I'm Tampa Bay, I would definitely claim Primo for 2 months. See what you got. Put him with that defensive core in front of him, and see what you could do. I would absolutely take a flyer on him. I mean, it's. There's no doubt. I don't think he's the answer, but hey, maybe with a really, really good defensive core in front of you, maybe with a really good team in front of you, you could hide some of his flaws and maybe you could develop him. I don't know who their goaltending coaches are in the system. Hey. I would absolutely take a flyer on King Primo.
Even Dustin Tokarski looked decent at a point with the right defense in front of him. Think about that one.
I find it's a shame that they're going to have to carry three goalies at the NHL level, which means he's never even really going to play. I can't see how he even gets in rotation, and you want him in Laval to get those reps.
Have you seen the goals that Monty and Allen have let in lately? I mean, I know they're NHL fixtures and such,
the problem with goalies, it always comes back to, and they'll always say the same thing. They'll let these banana goals in, and if you carry three goalies on a carousel, I mean, it could be several games before the guy gets back. They need repetition.
But we're not talking about bananas here. The goals that Monty and Allen have let in, they both let in a goal that, if you took 10,000 shots, you wouldn't be able to replicate that goal again. you know, they're ridiculous. The one that was basically a dump in and just bounced off the board and slowly trickled in.
I mean, these things happen. I think it's very it's everybody knows the two goalies on this team right now, Allen and Monty, right? And flip them upside down. It was, you know, before last year, Allen was obviously the one and Monty was the backup. Monty took some pretty decent steps. I'm not saying he's a bona fide number one yet, but if he keeps trending better, I mean, you know, you might have something there. I still think they definitely need to do something for the goaltending situation. I don't have the answer to that because goaltending today in this league is just so weird. It's either you're a superstar goaltender or like you're a passable starter. It's weird.
The NHL depth across the NHL is the worst I have ever seen, personally.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's not like it used to. The position is not like it used to be.
It's not. But is there as important as it used to be?
Listen, I can tell you this. The NHL itself should start looking into it because even if you look at the goaltending ranks going down to the juniors and whatnot, there's not many teams and organizations and leagues or parents in general that are investing in goaltending as much because it's too expensive of a position. That's literally my theory there. That most of the top goalies in the NHL right now are from Russia, are Russian goalies. It's not like it was, you know, when you looked at the across the NHL and almost every single team had a number one goalie. The only difference is that it was the jump from Lundqvist and Carey Price and Roberto Luongo, and then it dropped to like Braden Holtby, and you're like, oh, Braden Holtby is fringe. And you look at that today, he'd be one of the top goalies in the NHL.
Yeah, it's just I don't think the position is as I think the skill up front has gotten so good that it's hard to develop an elite goaltender that is consistent time and time and time and time and time and year after year after year after year. I think it's just the way the NHL and hockey has become. The talent in front is insane nowadays. Everybody can score. Everybody has moves. Everybody is a threat, really. And I just think, I mean, you look at the last Stanley Cup champions, right? Like Aiden Hill, Darcy Kemper. Like, what are these names? You're looking at them, you're like, well, what's going on here? Like, what were the days of Patrick Roy, Martin Brodeur, freaking, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like that anymore. And, you know, gone are those days. And I think that, you know, it's a pendulum. Goaltenders will probably come back eventually. But I think at the time being, they're not as crucial. And that's why the salary that Carey Price took up was such a headache for the Canadians. It's just, it wasn't as crucial as it was back in the day.
I mean, he was a talent though. Price was a talent to such a degree that he did make this team look far better than it actually was.
100%.
Sure, but Price could have stolen, like, and he almost did technically going on that cup run. But like back in the day, if it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, he probably could have stolen, you know, a cup here or two, the way the game was played with that talent level. But it's not like that anymore. Like you could bring your game, you know, you could improve your team a little bit. But you can't really carry them that much. We haven't seen too many goaltending performances where they actually end up with a Stanley Cup where the goaltender carried them the whole way through.
The last goalie to have a real like crazy year was 2 years ago, and it was Shesterkin. That's the last, like, real, like, wow, that goalie had almost a historical season.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
but and you can argue Vasilevsky in 21, he won the Conn Smythe, right? Like, you could argue that, but there was so much talent on that Tampa team as well.
Well, and to the point, though, there just aren't that many Shesterkins and Vasilevskys.
There's five goalies that in the NHL today that you look and say, these are bona fide elite number ones, and even to them, if I compare them to the pre-2017, who knows where they'd rank in the list. But I mean, there's five of them. It's Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, in no particular order, by the way. Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, Ottinger, Sorokin, and you give a nod to Hellebuck. Right? But then there's a massive drop-off after that. Then you're talking about the Kempers and some of the other goalies that you're seeing. And I mean, you gotta there's a massive problem with goaltending in the NHL.
I mean, I feel like you might be missing one or two guys there, but I don't
Indeed. There's two other goalies that I would also say are good, but they have fantastic teams in front of them in Georgiev and Vanacek.
I mean, Georgiev, it was the first one to come to my mind, but yeah, I guess you can make the argument that Colorado is that good that, yeah. But speaking of actual elite talent, one final question that I did want to bring up, because it's been something that's been talked about. Well, and it really picked up from the draft and when they didn't take Matvei Michkov. you know, people have been banging this belt quite a bit. The apparent lack of missing elite offensive talent. And so I'm just curious, I'm putting you boys on the spot here. If I were to say you're not allowed to answer via the draft, because that would be too easy. How, if you were in control of the team on this roster with the assets they have today, how would you go about acquiring an elite offensive talented player?
Well, an elite is open to interpretation.
So, okay. So if I were to say hypothetically, because these two names were out there, not out there, out there, but just talking, saying to say, do you consider Zegras and Nylander elite talent?
Nylander, yes.
Okay. What would it take to acquire Nylander?
I think Nylander is a possible target, 100%. I think you could absolutely. I think probably the Leafs they probably shouldn't be shopping him. If I'm going to be honest, I think that he's a guy.
Totally agree.
But yep. If I would go all in on William Nylander, I don't know what it would take to get him. It would probably take a humongous package, but I would go all in because. It's the only way you're going to get an offensive talent like that. You know, like the Trevor Zegras stuff, you saw with his salary. Like, he's not an elite guy. Look at what he got. It's not a $10 million, $9 million contract.
Well, a lot of that had to do because he didn't want to sign long-term also.
But so also, the Trevor Ducks didn't want to pay. The answer. Like, you can't...
I don't disagree. I'm in agreement with you guys. I think Nylander's elite, and I think Zegras is very good. Yes.
Yeah, he's highly skilled. You're going to see some flashes. He's going to come up with a highlight reel here and there, but he's not a game breaker.
Yeah.
He's not somebody that's going to literally grab the team on his shoulders and take off, at least not yet. And from what I've seen of him, would I be excited to see Zegras? Yeah, but I wouldn't give the moon to get him either.
But would you give the moon like Dave would do to get Nylander?
I'm on the fence with that because of Nylander's age. Now, by no means is he old, but he's 28, and you know he's going to get a massive contract. And what I don't want with Nylander is an eight-year contract at like almost $10 million, if not over. It's probably going to be more than $10 million. And by the time he's 35, 36, the true decline happens, and you know, he's getting paid $10.5, $11, $12 million, whatever that number is going to be eventually. That's where I'm a little reluctant. Tell me he's 25, and you give him an eight-year deal. Okay, I know we're talking about a few years, but those few years make a huge difference on a player like him. So I'm on the fence, but it depends. I'd struggle for Nylander, honestly. I know what he can bring. I know he'd be the best forward the Montreal Canadiens have today,
yep.
Right? In terms of production, in terms of high-end skill. I just don't know if I would give the moon for him.
Because the problem becomes when you look at a guy like Nylander, to Dave's point, it's kind of one of those things you sit back and when you play this game of what ifs, it is possible. It's very unlikely. In particular, it's even double unlikely that Toronto would trade to Montreal. But suffice to say, it is possible. You talk about these other elite offensive talent, younger guys that are 25 and under, they're not being traded. So you have to make a concession somewhere. You're going to have to make a trade. For an older guy, older,
well, that's
in
it.
Quotes, 28. That has to happen. Now, to your math, I think you kind of maybe did the math a little wrong. If you gave him $10.5 million for an eight-year contract at 28, he's done at 36. Mm-hmm. Like, the contract ends at 36. It's not, you're not paying him afterwards, right? So yeah, but you have to do it. And I guess the question is, if they're in such desperate need for it, if it's been so long since they've had a guy who can break 80 plus points on the team, I think you got to swing for the fences.
You want to know what I think?
A bunch of firsts, top level prospects, good roster player. I think you have to pull the trigger.
I'll give you an idea what I think Toronto would look to even have the conversation. In my opinion, okay, people might call me crazy, but you're looking at 2 first-round picks,
minimum.
You're going to be looking at somebody like Caden Goalie.
Yeah, probably.
They're going to love, especially that they have their window open and they think they could win the cup like they do every year. Josh Anderson to make the money work. And you're talking about another prospect, maybe two.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that's insane. Yes. And you have to bite your lip and you have to do
it. I don't do it. Not for Nylander.
I'd find a way to get Gouli out of there, but I would
also. I was the little caveat. I'd be like, anybody else? Any other defenseman, please?
Just because, like, to Matt's point a little bit, like, if you don't take that 28-year-old or whatever, like when is this opportunity ever going to come again? You know, when is an opportunity where a guy like this is going to be going somewhere and you have the opportunity to acquire him? It's going to be when they're 27, 28 years old. And William Nylander, he's a 80-point guy. He's put up 40 goals. He also doesn't play on the first line. He doesn't play on their first line, which is crazy. And but until like a few years ago, you know, because you could look at it earlier in his career, he wasn't hitting the expectations. He was playing on the third line. He was a third line winger for a lot of the time. Only recently in the past 5 years did he jump up to that second line, and he doesn't play on that first line most of the time. He does play quite often, but plays first power play minutes. But it's impressive nonetheless what he's doing there. And I think that if given a bigger role here on the Canadiens or on any other team, he'll be fit right in. And I think he's a guy that you just can't skip out on. If you have the opportunity to go acquire a guy like that, I would absolutely.
I would have to agree. And now I pose that question to everybody else who's sticking around and made it to the end of the episode. What would you do, and would you do anything? Is William Nylander an elite offensive talent that you think would fit very well on this team and the sort of trajectory that they're going on? Or do you agree more with Vito, where this is already a guy who's getting a little bit closer to 30 and you don't want to give everything it takes to get a guy that's already 30? Or do you agree more with Dave and me, where this is really the only age where that sort of kind of situation can even arise? So I'd love to hear what you guys have to think about that.
Or if there's another player. Yeah. Or if there's another player that they can think of that they would be willing
to... Oh, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. If there's another guy out there like that you think is an elite offensive talent that is in the realm of possibility. Don't be throwing me names like Jack Hughes and stuff, because it doesn't make any sense. That's besides the point. It's got to be realistic. It got to be, obviously, there's been a lot of talk out of Toronto where they weren't going to keep him around and he is the odd man out. So that's why it's kind of, you know, in the realm of possibility. But let us know who you think. If there's somebody else out there, we'd love to hear about it. And
slight correction, by the way. Sorry to cut you off there. William Nylander turns 28 by the end of the season.
Okay.
So he's actually 27 right now.
So does that change your mind?
No, not really.
No, okay. Thank you for that useless correction then. Everybody, thanks very much for sticking around. This was episode 1 of season 3. We're super excited to be back and bring this out again for another fun season with the Canadiens. I'm sure it's going to be eventful, to say the least. And here's hoping for just progression across the board. Just, you know, maybe not playoffs, obviously, but let's just see progression. Let's just see the players take that next step. And so on that final note, pay attention to the social media. Of course, you haven't liked, subscribe, appreciate that as always. Take a look on X or Twitter for the updates for when the episodes are going to be released. And for Vito and Dave, I'm Matt. And this was
Get Pucked.